Ekhatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekhatra AI. Welcome to the Deep Drive. Today we are taking on, well, a giant of history, Abraham Lincoln. And if you think you already know the story, you know, the folksy lawyer, the great emancipator, I think you should prepare to look a whole lot deeper.
That's so true. Our deep dive today is really focused on the incredible research of the historian Alan C. Guelso. His work makes us ask this really crucial question. What was the actual, you know, the philosophical structure of Lincoln's mind?
Right.
We're going beyond the typical politics. We're focusing on this core idea that Lincoln's political genius wasn't just instinct or luck. It was, I mean, it was built on a foundation of really rigorous intellectual work, logic, philosophy, deep reading.
So our mission today is to trace that evolution. We want to understand what Guelso calls the architecture of his mind. And we want to see how his intellectual journey from, say, a self-taught rationalist to a figure guided by providence, how that journey enabled him to steer the country through its absolute greatest crisis and in the process, redefine the whole nation.
To do that, we are leaning heavily on the insights of Alan C. Guelso. He's one of America's most distinguished Civil War historians, a senior research scholar at Princeton, and, this is really notable, a multiple winner of the Lincoln Prize. He is the person to go to for this.
But what makes his perspective so vital, I think, is that he's trained as both an intellectual historian and a philosopher, not just a biographer. He isn't satisfied with just telling us what Lincoln did.
Yeah,
he wants to understand why Lincoln thought the way he did.
Exactly. He focuses so intensely on the ideas, on the books Lincoln just devoured. You know, everything from Greek rhetoricians to Blackstone's legal theories, from John Locke to the Bible and the logical frameworks he used. Guelso really moves past that that mythology of the frontier hero.
Yeah, the log cabin story.
Right, to reveal this complex self-made thinker whose philosophy was really underpinning every single political move he made. It shows us that deep intellectual work is, well, it's a prerequisite for great leadership in a crisis.
Okay, so let's get right to the central thesis. Guelso basically positions the early Lincoln as America's last great politician of the Enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
This was a man who genuinely believed that reason, that rational argument, and sticking to natural law, the kind laid out in the Declaration of Independence, could solve any national problem. Even slavery.
That commitment to reason is the starting point, yeah. But the real greatness, what Guelso argues, is in the evolution. He details this really compelling three-part arc in Lincoln's intellectual life that we need to unpack.
Okay, so first we have the early Lincoln. This is the frontier autodidact, the self-taught man. This Lincoln is a pure Enlightenment rationalist, a skeptic who values cold logic, scientific necessity, and maybe above all else, his own ambition, the right for any person to rise on merit.
Then the second stage is what you could call the moral catalyst. This kicks in around the mid-1850s. And he shifts from being just a very sharp politician to a man with a real moral mission. He takes all those logical tools and sharpens them against the injustice of slavery, grounding his entire argument in moral reasoning and constitutional law.
And then comes the big one, the massive transformation, the wartime pivot.
Yes. The sheer, I mean, the incomprehensible scale of death and suffering in the Civil War, it just breaks his early faith in predictable, clean reason. It doesn't compute. So he pivots and he moves toward this profound idea of divine providence.
So he starts to see the war not just as a political conflict, but as something else entirely.
Something much bigger. He sees it as God's judgment on the entire nation, North and South, for the collective sin of slavery. And it's this final synthesis, you know, fusing rational law with this theological purpose that turns him into what Guelso calls the Redeemer President, giving all that sacrifice a lasting moral meaning.
Okay, that is a huge shift in worldview. Let's unpack that first stage. How does a self-educated guy from the frontier become such a powerful intellectual?
Well, it was an act of pure will. It was not an accident. Lincoln actively rebelled against what he saw as the intellectual poverty, the superstition of his youth. His self-education wasn't just casual reading. It was a dedicated mastery of the tools of thought.
So he didn't just read books. He was like internalizing their structure.
Absolutely. He immersed himself in logic and really crucially in classical rhetoric. He would study a book like William Scott's Lessons in Elocution, not just to become a better speaker, but to understand the very architecture of a persuasive argument. And he mastered legal theory through Blackstone's commentaries, which taught him that law wasn't just a set of rules, but principles that come from a higher moral order.
And this all shapes his early philosophy, which, as Guelso points out, was really skeptical.
Very much so. He was deeply influenced by Enlightenment thinkers like Thomas Paine, which led him into this period of pretty profound religious skepticism. He believed strongly in something called the doctrine of necessity.
The doctrine of necessity.
Yeah, the idea that the universe is like a perfect machine. It's governed by a predetermined rational chain of cause and effect. If the universe is a clockwork mechanism, then there's no room for, messy human choices or divine intervention. Everything is orderly, predictable.
That sounds almost cold, a little detached. And yet that rational foundation got seriously tested by politics.
It did. And the lightning rod for that was the Kansas-Nebraska Act in 1854. Guelzo calls this the key moment. This is what transformed him from just a capable Whig politician, focused on tariffs and canals, into a statesman with one single moral mission.
But why that act specifically? I mean, it just sounds like procedural politics organizing new territories. What made it a moral catalyst for a rationalist like him?
It was the principle behind it. Popular sovereignty. Stephen A. Douglas, the guy who proposed the act, he argued that pure democracy meant letting the local settlers vote on whether a new territory would allow slavery or not. To Douglas, this was the ultimate expression of majority rule.
And Lincoln saw that as a total moral cop-out.
Precisely. The Lincoln-Douglas debates, they weren't just stump speeches. They were these intense intellectual contests over what democracy even is. Lincoln fires back with his natural law argument, rooted right in the Declaration, that natural rights, endowed by a creator, they transcend majority rule. Democracy doesn't give 51% of the people the right to vote away the freedom of the other 49%.
So Douglas is arguing for a democracy of process. Whatever the majority decides is right, is right.
Exactly.
And Lincoln is arguing for a democracy of principle, that there are some eternal rights that a majority can't touch. That clarity, that philosophical distinction, is what made him such a devastating opponent.
Yeah, absolutely. And when he becomes president in 1861, this is why his approach to secession was so crystal clear. His first goal was conservative. It was legalistic. Preserve the Union. He treated secession not as a political choice, but as a constitutional impossibility and a legal rebellion, all based on that legal theory he had mastered.
But the war itself forced him into that radical pivot we talked about, emancipation.
Yeah.
And Guelzo shows that even this move was done in a purely legalistic way.
It had to be. The Emancipation Proclamation was a meticulously calculated legal document. It was based entirely on his war powers as commander-in-chief. It was a military necessity. That's why it only freed slaves in the Confederate areas, not in the border states that stayed with the Union. He needed it to hold up in court. It wasn't a moral declaration at first. It was a military order.
But the reason he wanted that order to stick was rooted in that moral certainty he developed in the 1850s. That famous line of his, "If slavery is not wrong, nothing is wrong." Emancipation shifted the whole purpose of the war. It turned a war to save the Union geographically into a war to redeem its promise of equality.
Which brings us to the most powerful and I think the most complex part of his journey. That pivot to providence.
Okay, hold on. For a man so grounded in that doctrine of necessity, that rational clockwork universe, how do you square that massive shift? Was he abandoning reason or was he fusing it with something else?
He was forced to evolve. The staggering, just irrational death toll of the war, 600,000 men, that couldn't be explained by a simple rational cause and effect. His Enlightenment framework just, it broke. The doctrine of necessity is built on logic governing outcomes, but if logic was in charge, why was the cost so high and the outcome so slow?
It was a crisis of meaning for him then. He couldn't just apply a rational equation to that kind of suffering.
Precisely. He had to move from thinking of the universe as a machine to seeing it as a moral system. He synthesized his rationalist belief in fixed laws with a theological framework. He started to see the war as a divine, necessary purification.
So this wasn't just political rhetoric for a speech. You're saying he genuinely believed the war was God's judgment on the entire nation, the North for being complicit and the South for perpetuating slavery.
Absolutely. He basically nationalized the sin. And that realization, it culminates in the second inaugural address, which Guelzo rightly calls one of the most profound theological statements in American history. It frames the war not as a victory over an enemy, but as a collective atonement for everyone. That sets the stage for a new birth of freedom grounded in cosmic justice.
That is just remarkable, that ability to grow so dramatically intellectually while leading during the ultimate crisis. Let's dig into the key themes Guelzo pulls out from this leadership model.
Okay, the first theme is what you could call Enlightenment democracy. This really challenges the idea of the purely pragmatic leader, the one who just manages crises day by day. Lincoln's commitment to reasoned argument shows that a philosophical grounding is essential to hold firm when everything else is falling apart.
It does make you wonder, do modern leaders spend enough time on that kind of deep reflection? Or are they just constantly reacting to the 24-hour news cycle?
And that flows right into the second theme, the journey from reason to providence. His greatness was in his capacity for profound intellectual and moral growth. True strength in leadership isn't just stubbornly sticking to your first position. It's the courage to question your own deepest assumptions and adapt your worldview when reality forces you to.
The third theme has to be rhetoric and democratic persuasion. Lincoln was a master of language, something he honed studying the classics. He could take these incredibly complex philosophical ideas, natural law, constitutional principles, divine judgment, and translate them into clear, accessible, and deeply persuasive communication.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, think about the Gettysburg Address. He took what was essentially a cemetery dedication and transformed it into a powerful statement of national purpose. Effective leadership needs that ability to educate and persuade based on real intellectual integrity, not just clever slogans. He wasn't reflecting public opinion. He was deliberately shaping it.
Guelzo's work is just filled with these memorable lines that articulate his philosophy. Let's highlight a few.
Okay. We mentioned his early rationalist faith, which is captured perfectly in the Lyceum Address back in 1838. Let reverence for the laws become the political religion of the nation.
That one line just perfectly sums up his early view. The Constitution and the rule of law, those were the sacred texts that had to protect society from chaos and mob rule. It's almost a spiritual devotion to reason.
Then you have the moral absolute, the thing that went beyond any political calculation. If slavery is not wrong, nothing is wrong.
That statement grounds everything. For him, it's a philosophical truth that's self-evident. It's not up for debate.
But maybe the most profound quote, the one that summarizes that whole intellectual evolution, comes from the second inaugural. Yet if God wills that it continue until, every drop of blood drawn with the lash shall be paid by another drawn with the sword.
Wow. That is a radical, almost terrifying vision of divine justice. It is not a victory speech. It's a shared reckoning. He's arguing that the war's immense suffering is the necessary price for national redemption.
So looking at this whole intellectual model, how can we apply Lincoln's way of thinking today? I think Guelzo's work really highlights what you could call principled pragmatism.
Which is so important. It means you stay unwavering on your core moral values like human rights or equality, but you're flexible and tactical in how you get there. Lincoln was uncompromising that slavery was evil, but he waited for just the right military and political moment for the Emancipation Proclamation. He knew when to compromise on method, but never on principle.
It also highlights leadership as education. Lincoln was dealing with arguably the most complex problem the nation has ever faced. He used his speeches not just to inform people, but to gradually educate the public on the immense moral stakes. He brought them along to support radical ideas like the 13th Amendment.
And finally, and maybe this is the most relevant for our world today, is the power of deep reflection. The book stresses that Lincoln's biggest decisions came from intense reflection, from solitude, from wrestling with ideas. In a world of instant reactions and soundbites, this just screams that we need slow, deliberate intellectual effort to solve our biggest problems. We need leaders who can think deeply, not just react quickly.
If there's one lasting insight from Guelzo's work, for me it's the proof that ideas have profound history-changing consequences. Lincoln's presidency was so extraordinary because it was guided by this deep, coherent philosophical system that he was constantly willing to challenge and evolve under immense pressure.
My final takeaway is how that growth ultimately redefined America. His ability to fuse that Enlightenment reason that all men are created equal with a kind of theological justice gave the American experiment a new, more enduring meaning. He gave us a new birth of freedom, proving that the greatest leaders are the ones who are capable of the greatest intellectual and moral transformation. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acatra Foundation.